I'd like to call the Subcommittee of Natural Resources of the Joint Ways and Means Committee to order and open the public hearing on House Bill 5022, Department of Forestry.
Chair Mosley and committee, I've asked Clark Seely and Ted Lawrenson to do their presentation of the administrative agency administration.
Clark? Good afternoon.
Excuse me, Mr. Wu. Would you like to go through some of the material that we have presented here first?
Yes, we would.
Clark, go ahead.
Chair Meserly, members of the committee, Clark Seely, the Assistant State Forester for Administrative Services. I'll highlight and cover for you one of the handouts. This is a follow-up to a question from last week regarding the implementation of the police and fire PERS program for the Department of Forestry employees, and that's the handout that a cover letter. What I've included for you today is the testimony from PERS in 1999 in consideration of Senate Bill 327, which was the bill that brought the department's firefighters into the PERS system. So that cover, that top letter is from the executive director and governmental relations manager from PERS. Just behind that is the legislative fiscal analysis of the bill, and those are probably the two pieces that are that speak to the fiscal impact the best. The cover letter from PERS indicates on the second page, the background information describes the system. And in essence, the benefits for the Department of Forestry firefighters are the same as they are for other firefighters under police and fire. The fiscal impact on page two of that shows an impact on the state of Oregon employer rate total in terms of all state agencies of 0.01%. Increase on the rate itself. Now, the way that they described this is they described it as if it was only to be applied to the Department of Forestry, and that's the 4.88% that you see there. And I think this is their standard approach in terms of describing impacts. But but because the rate is pooled across all state of Oregon agencies, then the total cost is spread across all agency budgets, and that's the impact of 1/100 of 1% in terms of the increase. Now, at that time, the employer contribution was lower than it is today. It was down in the, I believe, the 8% range 4 years ago. So that's the relative 0.01% increase at that level.
So I think what we were interested in more was in what is the total cost to the Department of Forestry itself?
Well, Chair Meserly, actually the department doesn't have a direct cost from implementation of the bill. Again, it's as if any of the PERS changes get spread across all state agencies. So there is no direct impact to the Department of Forestry's budget or to our fiscal status, but rather just an overall impact of bringing these employees into the system over time.
Okay.
And we've also included in the handout for you towards the back our process and principles for certification of employees or positions, rather, into the system.
Okay.
And that's our current status.
Any questions from the committee? Okay, go ahead.
The other handout, Mr. Lawrenson will be referencing when he speaks to the agency's resource policy and planning effort. We're going to pick up today at agency administration.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. This handout here on state government service charges is also at your place. This is Lori Byerly put this together for you from a question that you'd asked. If you have any questions about it, Lori.
Chair Meserly, members of the subcommittee, for the record, this is Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services. Actually, Forestry did the work on that handout. But what it shows you is kind of over time, changes in the service charges area that they're being assessed. Take a look on the back real quickly. You'll see where a couple of areas where there's been some dramatic increases. If you look in that price list change charge column, if you look down at risk management expenditure, you'll see some significant increases there. This is driven by changes in the insurance industry overall, as well as the state's tort liability claims that have increased in the last few years. And also, for the first time in a decade, agencies are being directly assessed for the cost of workers' compensation insurance. Mm-hmm. For the last 10 years, these costs have been paid out of some reserves and interest earnings, but those dollars have ran out. So there's some big changes there. There's also some changes. If you're to look at the Department of Administrative Services Information and Resources Division Managed Planning and Review Charges, there's been some increases there. That's directly related to the agency's usage of some of those services that are provided centrally for information technology. So that just kind of gives you a snapshot of what's happened over time and what's happened to drive the costs for state government service charges in the 0305 budget.
Thank you. This is helpful.
This is very helpful.
I thought I was dyslexic, though, because all of a sudden we're going from right to left. I'm not used to it.
Any questions?
Looking hard. Why don't we just pause here for a second? Are we ready to move on?
This is very interesting. I wish I could see it better.
Hey, you've got it that far away.
Well, if we have other questions, we can come back to it. How about that?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we'll work today with you briefly. Agency administration, the equipment pool and facilities management programs of the agency, and capital improvement and capital construction. We're now towards the back of the presentation book under tab agency administration, which again is towards the back of the book. The agency administration has a biennial budget program was actually created by the legislature in 1991 and in essence pulled out of our operating programs such as fire and forest practices and so forth the funding and FTEs that really contribute to the overall administration of the agency. The agency administration program includes the executive staff and leadership staff of the agency, our support of the Board of Forestry, the human resources, finance, information technology, and internal services functions, and then finally our resource policy and planning effort and our public affairs effort. The funding for agency administration is actually built on a prorated system of the other funds of the agency, such as general fund or state forest funds or harvest taxes, on a workload analysis basis. In other words, we've gone through analysis over time to determine how much of our administration work in finance, for example, paying bills, is associated with each of the operating programs, and then the system funds agency administration based on that breakout. In general, agency administration is funded about half general fund and about half other funds. Now, the reason for that, because our overall budget is not half and half, is that a large share of the agency administration half that is general fund equates to and represents the fire program portion of that. And so fire is represented in agency administration fully by general funds.
Clerk staff just said you need to, for the record.
Sorry. Clark Seeley, the Assistant State Forester for Agency Administration. Thank you. I would just say if you turn to page H10, this is a similar type of diagram that you've seen with the operating programs and just describes the agency administration overall. Most of our direct statutory authority is found in Chapter 526. And then, of course, we operate under many of the same laws that most state agencies do in other chapters of Oregon law. And towards the bottom again, then, are the overall program areas that I've just spoken to. If I can have you turn back then in the book to H5, just a few pages back, I want to highlight one other chart for you, and that is the historical and projected for 0305. Percent of total agency that administrative services represents, and the top line shows that percentage as a percentage of FTE, And the bottom line shows it as a percentage of the agency's operating budget. And you can see that we have been in the 9.5 to 8.5 range, depending on whether it's FTE or budget. But we're now projected to be down to 8% approximately for FTE and about 7% for budget with the 0305 governor's balance budget. But I think that the chart is interesting in terms of showing you the percentage of the agency that agency administration represents overall. We have taken about a 12% reduction in agency administration overall compared to a previous activity level, primarily through House Bill 5100 reductions that carry forward into 0305. That 12% reduction has primarily been in reducing the size of staff in agency administration. We chopped off a couple of operating units and the managers that went with those units, combined, recombined then the remaining functions, and then also in the field, we combined a couple of our field districts and eliminated two management positions in order to consolidate two districts. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop in terms of overview and turn and ask Ted to talk a little bit about the resource policy and planning.
Sorry, somewhere was I was flipping pages. I heard you say that half of this budget is general fund.
Approximately.
What's the other half?
Senator Messerly or Chair Messerly and Senator Dukes, the other half is then a combination of the other funds that fund the agency in a proportional relationship. For example, state forest revenue or harvest tax revenue or those kinds of other funds.
What are those proportions? Do you have that?
Chair Messerly and Senator Dukes, I don't have them right with me today, but we'd be glad to supply those to you.
I'd appreciate
it. Be glad to do that.
Chair Messerly and members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrenson, Policy Resources Planning Division Assistant State Forester. Oregon is somewhat unique in that we have a well-developed resource policy program that assesses the conditions of Oregon's forest. I'd say we are substantially ahead of many states. The real fundamental objectives include demonstrating that we do have well-managed forests, trying to maintain a positive business climate, demonstrating how policy choices affect that. This process, our assessment process, is implemented in collaboration with a number of partners, including OSU College of Forestry, Oregon Forest Resource Institute, PNW Research Station, and with Oregon Plan Partners. One of the things we do is collect long-term data on key benchmarks, and Representative Johnson, for example, asked a question about benchmark that was referred to in some of the information on state forests about forest land base, and this is the program that actually collects those data on land use trends in terms of forest. We collect data on timber growth and harvest by ownership. We track public attitudes and beliefs. A lot of the data we collect is through what we call our forest information and assessment plot system, which is a grid of plots that we maintain on private lands with the landowner's understanding of how the data will be used. It looks at land use changes, timber growth and harvest, and changes in stand conditions over time, and those data are very, very powerful. The data we collect has very clearly impacted policy and rulemaking. As one example, and I think it's an important example, the department went through what was called the Forest Policy Advisory Committee process, looking at forest practices, rules, and protection of salmon and water quality as part of the Oregon plan. Because we had good data, relatively speaking, on forest conditions, on riparian conditions, and their overall effectiveness and functioning, we were able to produce outcomes that are substantially different than our partner states north and south of us. The data have also been highly important in addressing federal ESA and clean water issues, and again, some of Oregon's outcomes are different because we do have those data. This report is in your packet. It's a summary of the kind of assessment projects we have underway. There's a number of analytical tools that are being developed, especially economic and modeling tools to look at the impacts of different policy options and regulations. We're also developing some inventory tools. While the FIA plot system is very valuable, it doesn't have the clarity to look at special components of the system like riparian areas. We're in the process with our Oregon Plan partners and actually developing an integrated all land use monitoring system to assess and inventory riparian areas. And the final part of this process is communicating results, and that occurs in a number of forums, whether it's policymaking or with OSU and symposium and that sort of thing. We've partnered a lot with OFRI in that process, and those have provided some very valuable and important tools that often lead to important policy discussions. A recent example of that was the fire symposium last fall that attracted a number of participants in the Bend area, and was a very valuable process. That's kind of an overview of what the assessment and policy division does.
Questions or comments? Let's proceed.
Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee, we're ready to move to the equipment pool tab then. The agency operates an internal service fund under state law and uses this internal service fund to manage an equipment pool which comprises about 500 vehicles and also about 2,500 pieces of radio equipment. Those are kind of the two large categories of equipment in the pool. We do this, particularly the radio program, in conjunction with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Department of Parks and Recreation, and operate the equipment pool, the radio portion of the equipment pool, in a three-way partnership with those agencies. We share frequencies, radio frequencies, with them. That allows us, obviously, to stay in good communication in the field with the other agencies, and it also helps all three of us to keep our costs relatively low. The pool program is, again, as an internal service fund, the revenue for the program comes from the operating programs themselves. So we charge ourselves operation and repair, rental, and rental costs for vehicles, and those dollars are put into the pool, and then expenses for maintenance and repair and replacement are made out of the equipment pool itself. So I'll be glad to answer any questions on the equipment pool, but if not, we can...
Questions or comments on the equipment pool? Boy, you're getting off easy. This is I suppose next we're going to facilities.
We'll go to facilities next. Chair Morgan and members of the subcommittee, likewise, the agency maintains and operates nearly 400 buildings and other structures across the state, ranging from small guard stations and lookout sites to office buildings. Under a relatively new statute, ORS 276-285, which I believe was passed in the 1997 legislature, we now operate the maintenance and repair of our facilities out of a facilities program. That statute gives agencies the ability to create our own internal service fund, once again, very similar to our equipment pool program, and to move forward in terms of maintenance and repair and operation of buildings and other facilities through this fund. The major change for 0305 and for this budget is that we have proposed to essentially establish this facilities management program as a separate budgetary program of the agency. And we did this in concert with the Budget Management Division and with Legislative Fiscal as a way to, similar to the equipment pool, to be able to bring this program out and have it serve as a separate program in the budget and be able to look at it as an internal service program in that respect. So that's the main change. It's a net zero impact because we took the dollars out of the agency administration and moved them over into facilities to create this new program. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions if there's any?
You got one more?
Actually, two more, but they'll be quick. The next one is capital improvement, and the next tab. And our capital improvement request, for the most part, is... essentially just a continuation of the kind of capital improvement projects that we have had for a number of years, and in essence represents essentially a maintenance of activity level. Again, we have about 400 buildings ranging in age from relatively new to quite old buildings that were built in the 1930s and 40s. And of course, as you can imagine, as we go through time, we require funds to make improvements on those buildings. The bulk of the capital improvement dollars that are in the budget are in our state forest program as they work to keep buildings and other facilities, tree coolers and so forth, in good repair. The fire program has a little bit of capital improvement dollars associated, but frankly, with the general fund situation the way it is, the governor's balanced budget does not include a large amount of fire program capital improvement dollars.
Questions?
Thank you. We will now move to the last tab, which is capital construction. And actually, in this tab, what you have for 0305, Mr. Chair, is simply an update of our major capital construction projects, which involve the Salem Compound Construction Project here in Salem, the Tillamook District Office in Tillamook, and the Tillamook Interpretive Center. Now, all three of these projects will be completed either very early in the next biennium, or mid to late 0305, but all of the capital construction limitation requests and the budget review process for all three of these projects have occurred in previous sessions, and so we don't have actually any new capital construction requests for 0305, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Clark, the Interpretive Center, and you're talking about the Tillamook Forest?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I think the governor pulled the operating budget in for that. Is that right?
Well, I know the debt service, I noticed, was pulled. I don't know what else.
Mr. Chair and Senator Deuce, we had proposed early on in the agency request that some consideration be given to a capital COP for completion of the Interpretive Center, but we've since rethought that and looked at that again with DAS budget management and concluded we can finish the project in 0305 essentially online with what we have now in the plan.
Senator Duke?
I was going to ask about that center as well. I thought I remembered carrying a bill that put a dollar or created a fund or something, and that the money was going to be raised by outside contributions. Has that happened enough to build it?
Chair Miserly and Senator Dukes, yes and no. You're exactly correct in terms of the process, and our staff, particularly Doug Decker, who's the interpretive director for the state forest programs in Northwest Oregon area, is continuing on the fundraising trail and will be for about the next year as we conclude the fundraising for completion of the project.
He is a state employee?
Yes.
What pays his salary?
I believe his funding is entirely state forest program funding.
And his job description is fundraising?
No, his job description is he is the recreation and education manager for the department in all of Northwest Oregon State Forest programs, but as part of the completion of the project for the Tillamook Interpretive Center, he has been working with the nonprofit trust organization to raise funds for the center.
Give me some more detail on what that position, and do we have any others like this?
We have other.
I have to be honest with you, one of my hopes this session is to return more money to the counties. And it's interesting to know that we have somebody who's out of their funds, who's dedicated to interpretation of the forest and is out trying to raise money to finish the Interpretive Center. So I'm need to learn more.
Okay, we can provide that to you.
Any other questions? Comments? Thank you. Okay. Where did you want to wrap up?
Chair Merzley, a member of the committee,
I just have three brief statements in the general fund reduction plan. We stand ready to continue to work with the subcommittee, the analysts, and the governor's office to create a final plan and solution. In terms of the fire program funding, I think we all know we must move forward with planning for an adequate level of funding for this coming fire season. And then in House Bill 2301 and 2195, which is the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund and Harvest Tax, those have been referred to Ways and Means, and we'll need to work on a concurrent with a budget finalization. Actually, we start tomorrow afternoon, I believe, on the House Bill 2301. And that's any other questions?
All right. Any other questions, comments? Roy, could you review for me? I think you put it together for us. Make sure I've got it clear in my mind. What the department has spent on the HCP to date, and what is in this budget to continue the HCP for both the Elliott and the Northwest.
The Northwest, we've spent roughly about $2 million to date. This goes over just not this current biennium, but actually the last biennium started then. And as far as the Elliott HCP, I don't have that number with me. I can get back to you on that number.
And what have you got budgeted for the coming year?
Park, you remember?
We can get
that back to you on that, too.
Appreciate that. I think that's information we need before a work session.
Additional clarification, I think it would be interesting if we could get some information on the HCP funding, if we could find out exactly where in the budget they were attributing that.
Okay. Can you do that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5022. Well, I should ask. Did you have anyone to add here?
No.
Sorry. And I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5034, Land Conservation and Development.
It's coming.
Lori, are you going to cover that today?
Chair, Master, the members of the subcommittee, Ms. Pearson's in another meeting. She's on her way. I'm going to sit tight until she shows up and then I'll disappear.
So you just assume that we waited until she...
Oh, she just be ahead. You can wait. I mean, I plan on being silent, letting the agency talk.
We can operate that.
Well, we'll give you some time to relax and start with Sue and Sebastian. As soon as you let her relax a little bit. Thank you, Susan.
Well, maybe we can narrow some of the things that we have because we have all of the paper that we need to
Mr. Chair, Chair, members of the subcommittee, I just distributed to you some LFO handouts on the budget for the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and that's House Bill 5034. And that's what we'll be hearing about over the next several days. And just briefly, for some orientation and background, I've handed out some slides, printed slides for you that just give you kind of a snapshot of the department's role and purpose. And then on the back of that page, if you look, there's a pie chart showing you the budget for the department and in the governor's budget. The total is about $17.2 million total funds. And you can see in that pie chart that about half of that, 48.8%, is general fund, 43.4% federal funds, and then the balance is other funds, 55 positions and 48.3 FTE. And then there's also a slide that highlights for you some of the major budget drivers and challenges for this department. And then I've also provided to you the more detailed analysis that you've seen, I'm sure, on other agencies, this one before, DLCD. I've indicated in the orientation and background sheet that there were some budget notes from the 01 session, and I'm sure the department will be covering those in its presentation. Just for your information, I've indicated where they are in the agency's ways and means document, and that's on behind tab A on pages 39 and 40, and then behind tab B on pages 59 through 61. And then I briefly listed there what those budget notes address. There are two audit reports this interim, one from the Secretary of State's Audits Division, pretty typical report that's required when there's a change in director, and so that was issued in 2002. And then the Legislative Fiscal Office for the Joint Legislative Audit Committee also performed an audit, and that was on the department's Ocean and Coastal Program. And we can get into more detail about that later. I didn't provide you the full report, but if any of you would like to have that, I can certainly provide copies. And finally, the significant policy or oversight issues that I've listed there. One of the budget notes pertained to the department's allocation of federal grant funds to local coastal governments, and then, again, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee oversight of the Ocean and Coastal Management Program. And that's up my overview.
The in more detailed audit you mentioned, are they
Mr. Chair, actually, no, it's not a very lengthy audit report at all. And again, I'd be happy to get a copy of that. Unless, I'm sorry, Nan, did you provide that in your presentation? I can't remember if it's in
it's
or not.
Behind
it might not already be.
The pink
it does
appendix
look like it's in here.
Is
yes,
the LFO
in fact,
audit
it is
report.
In appendix E in their presentation document. In the very last tab, it's appendix.
We have several pinks.
Right.
Yeah, it's labeled Appendix E. It doesn't have a
appendix
tab,
E?
But it's
okay.
The pink sheet that says E.
Okay, got it. Okay, does that conclude it?
Mr. Chair, it does.
Thank you, Sue. Go ahead, Nan. We'll have you do the overview before we hear from Diana.
Okay.
We're ready when you are.
Chair Meserly, Senators, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nan Evans. I'm the interim director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I was reflecting today, it's exactly 2 months today since the governor first approached me and asked me if I would do this. And I've been in this role now for 7 weeks. So some things I know and some things I don't. So I will ask questions of my staff when I can't answer your questions. But in terms of an overview, the department, of course, was established by Senate Bill 100, passed in 1973, which is exactly 30 years ago. It came from a general concurrence in the state that uncoordinated and inadequate planning was, in fact, hurting the state. and it had a rather deceptively simple kind of purpose, and that was to sustain the farm and forest land base and their associated industries and maintain and invigorate urban centers in the urban centers, and then to keep a network of the public infrastructure affordable. And we'll go into that in just a minute. And in doing so, it then established the department to provide statewide standards, technical assistance, and, where necessary, enforcement. Over the past 30 years, it's been an increasingly complex environment we've lived in, and the land use system has gotten more and more complex as that has gone on. Now, at the beginning of our fourth decade, pardon me, I was so thrilled that I'm actually going to operate this thing. So, we are at a time of change. We'll be talking to you more that we have just adopted with the Land Conservation and Development Commission a new strategic plan. In that, you will see new areas of focus. We call them strategic initiatives. And you will see an entirely new set of performance measures. Much of what the agency is focusing on now has to do with economic development. We're also increasing our emphasis on customer service. And as I mentioned earlier, not only is there a new director, but there's an entirely new management team. Two of them are here with me today. This is Lainey Smith, who is the new manager of the Operations Services Division, and Teddy Leland in the back is our fiscal analyst and budget officer. And as time goes by, when it's time to talk about some of the detail of the budget, you'll meet the other new managers. The management team actually had its first full management meeting just a week ago. These folks were selected because they had a proven track record of being able to solve problems collaboratively, to think creatively, and to work with local jurisdictions as partners. I, for one, am really quite pleased to have an entirely new team. We are just in the process of developing performance expectations. I gave them my first cut at performance expectations at our first meeting last week. And primarily the theme of it was, I hold myself to pretty high standards. I hold them to the same standards. And we want to talk about, and I'll use these sort of as quotes, but getting to yes, how before no. Sometimes the perfect, in fact, is the enemy of the good. The need to prioritize and the need to, of course, treat people as you would like to be treated. The presentation now is organized to answer.
Nan, yeah. Did you say help before no or hell no?
Senator Mesley, we missed I answer that question.
No, I do want to ask you, though,
sure.
What is the time frame for the new director and who's on the management team?
Chair Mesley, the time frame for the new director, on the advice of many, the decision about starting a search for a new director will not begin until the legislative session has wound down, until we have a budget and we know the direction that we'll be going for the next biennium. I think this is fair to any potential applicants as well as the state, as well as the kind of resources that are necessary to actually conduct a search. And that's as much as an answer as I know. So that would be the next step after completion of the legislative session. The management team, there are four division managers. Lainey Smith, is the operations service division manager. We even have a new name, community services division. Is that right? Or and it's shown in your book as the local and regional services division because it's that new. It is in fact also a new organization chart. The head of that division is Rob Halliburton, who was a field rep here in the Willamette Valley. The Planning Services Division, which is the division that has the policy specialists as well as the Transportation Growth Management Program, the new manager for that is Ann Beyer. She worked with the agency in the FEMA Floodplain Management Program. The acting head of the Coastal Division, which is, of course, as you all know, is where I came from. Currently, right now, Bob Bailey is acting there as putting together our grant application, which is due to NOAA within days. And that's the team.
Representative Morgan.
I'm kind of confused here. The new strategic plan, does it exist at this time?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan. It does exist. Lainey will be talking a bit about it shortly. It is a fairly short document, however. It is, in terms of what the commission adopted, it is really two pages because it states the mission, the vision, and it's behind Appendix A. And there is more detail to it than what's there. And when we talk about how the agency is performing, Lainey will be spending a lot of time talking about what's in it and what the performance measures are, the performance measures are somewhere else in the document. Tab 4 is where the performance measures are. And that lays out the strategic plan framework and the measures.
Representative Morgan, did you have a question?
Talk to us about, I mean, what, there's a date on here that says final July 22nd, 2002.
Is that correct? Yeah, that's correct.
Talk to us about how this vision came forward and who's bought into it. And I'm just curious about where this thing came from, not having even known that you were working on this.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, would you like me to do that now, or may I do that later in our presentation? Either way is fine.
I think presentation would probably be better.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So, moving on now with a response to the Chair's four questions, why DLCD exists. We believe it exists for a number of reasons. We believe that it exists because good planning is, in fact, good government, and it does save taxpayers money, mostly in terms of providing efficient economical utilities and services, thoughtful and orderly development, and quality communities. The literature is full of examples that talk about when a community is planned, if you take different assumptions about different densities, you do in fact save in infrastructure development costs and maintenance costs in communities that are planned as compared to those that are not. There's another sort of interesting little tidbit of fact. In most sort of metropolitan areas, particularly the sprawling ones in our country, about 2% of the work trips are on public transit. In a planned urban area such as Portland, the figure there is that 7% of the work trips are on public transit. The reason that's important is the highway system people believe that for every 5% savings in work trips, you can extend the life of a highway system for sometimes as much as 15 years. So it's just an example of how, when done well, planning does, in fact, save money.
And I hope that as you get into the details of your presentations, that you're going to discuss some of the negatives that have been on small communities. I know, and don't get me wrong, I do support land use planning, but we also hear from our constituents of some of the burdens that they simply can't deal with.
Certainly, Chair Messerly, and we will do that. there is, of course, good and bad planning. And what I'm trying to do, Chair Meserly and the committee, is perhaps give a slightly different face to DLCD for the future. Because we also believe good planning can help create jobs. It certainly has helped in the agriculture and forest industry to the extent that planning can. Those are also resource-driven industries that respond to other factors. DLCD is a member of the Community Development Forum, which includes the League of Cities, Association of Counties, the Public Ports District, Special District Associations, and seven other state agencies. And the Community Development Forum, in fact, has identified two of DLCD's activities as significant in the job-creating environment we're in. One of those programs is the field assistance that our field staff give, and the other is transportation growth management. We believe, again, when done well, planning is good business. I think it's probably fair to say that planning in Oregon over the three decades has done a pretty decent job in preserving farmland. If you look at the figures nationwide, we have been able to preserve farmland and at the same time increase farm production. Local plans can be economic development tools, and I think this is where the work of the future is to improve the capacity of those tools to be economic development tools. And lastly, I believe that good planning does make good communities. We're, of course, part of a big system, an integrated system. Would like to assert that land use planning, again, when done well, is part of the solution and is connected with each of the other elements that will support economic development and economic recovery. The system itself, of course, is based on the 19 statewide goals that are the foundation for planning. These goals were developed in 1974 as the result of a fairly extensive public process, more than 100 hearings, more than 10,000 Oregonians. They're clumped here sort of by like category for kind of ease of thinking about them. They, in their detail, are behind, in the overview section, behind tab 1 on pages 4 and 5.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Senator Dukes.
There weren't 19 in 1974, were there?
Chair Meserly, Senator Dukes, that's
like
correct.
The 10 or something.
The last 5, I believe, were added later.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I was thinking it was 10, which I couldn't remember. Just amazes me. There are always, every time I turn around, it seems like there's another goal. So. Thank you.
The first two, of course, require citizen involvement at all levels, and goal two is actually establishing the notion that Oregon would use a system of statewide land use planning. 3 and 4 apply to agriculture and forestry land. That's been historically certainly the core of the program. The notion that outside of zoned urban growth boundaries, there is a need to protect tracts of land for farm and forest use from incompatible development. There's a cluster of goals that are urban and rural development goals, economic development, housing, public facilities, transportation, and urbanization. I believe probably recreation also goes in there, but it's not a goal that's used very often. There's also a set of natural resource goals that run from the general to the specific. There's one very specific goal for the Willamette River Greenway. The rest of them address different kinds of natural resources, including natural hazards. And then lastly, and these were the last set of goals to be added, or the last four are the coastal goals. There are four of them, one each for estuaries, shorelines, beaches and dunes, and oceans. And these are the four goals that then form the policy framework for the coastal management program, which is federally funded. DLCD does have a new mission, and it's to support all of our partners in creating and implementing comprehensive plans that reflect and balance the statewide planning goals, the visions of citizens, and the interests of local, state, federal, and tribal governments. And as a part of the strategic planning process, which we'll get to in just a moment, we went through a sort of an internal process of identifying where our commitments were. And in 2003, we're ready to make a statement that DLCD is committed to making a positive contribution to the state's economic competitiveness. We are committed to working to earn the public's trust and to aspire towards innovative, sustainable urban development, to balance resource protection and growth management, to respect the interests of all our partners, and to maintain a national recognition as a leader in the arena of land conservation and development. Now, with that, what I'd like to do is turn to Lainey Smith and ask her to walk through the strategic planning efforts we've been through in the last year or so. And Lainey, if you would also talk about some of the public involvement process and the timing of when things were started, to answer Representative Morgan's question.
Good afternoon, Chair Messerly, members of the committee. My name is Lainey Smith. I'm Operations Division Manager for the department. I am going to spend a little time on this chart explaining our whole performance management system. And in your book, that is tab 4. And looking at this chart, it's how we implement and manage and monitor our strategic plan. And so starting with the strategic plan itself, that was approved last year. And it was approved after a series of workshops with stakeholders. We also had information on our website where people wrote in comments for it. I was not involved directly in that particular effort, so there's probably details that I don't know about, but I know we had a group of state agency stakeholders, and we had a group of stakeholders that were private folks, home builders, the realtors, and so forth that participated in the process. And we had workshops with them directly and then also with our commission in determining this strategic plan and setting it up. And for more detailed information, I would have to come back and give you the specifics on that.
Excuse me just a second. Representative Morgan, would you like more detailed information?
I would be interested in knowing who were in the agency stakeholder groups and the private sector stakeholder groups.
The strategic plan is a long-term plan. Its horizon is about 6 to 10 years. It includes our vision and mission, and the vision and mission are on page 3 under tab 1 of your book. But mostly I'm going to focus on our long-term goals in talking about our strategic plan. And moving from there, from the strategic plan, the next block over is the business plan. And we are in the process of developing our business plan right now. It won't be done until we have a final budget and we know exactly what we have to work with. The strategic plan tells us what, you know, what we want to focus on in the next several years. The business plan narrows down the what for shorter term And it starts getting into the how we're going to accomplish our strategic plan. So that includes a set of strategic initiatives, which are a 2 to 4 year horizon, budget goals, which are 2 year horizon, so it would just be for next biennium, our organizational structure, and then the budgets for our divisions and the work plans for our divisions. The action plan, the block on the right, really gets down to the specifics about how we're going to meet our budget goals, and that is your basic work plan and management performance agreements. And then on the bottom, that last block, the performance tracking, that includes our performance measures and our system for monitoring how we're doing on meeting our performance measures and therefore meeting our long-term goals.
Excuse me, what is the public involvement as you go through this process? At what points do you have public involvement?
The public involvement is mostly at the strategic plan level. Now, a little confusing, our performance measures are part of the strategic plan, so they were part of the process with the stakeholder groups and working with our commission to develop them. And as we get further down, there's less involvement of the public. The initiatives that we have for this, the budget goals and the initiatives that we have for the next several years, were also taken to our commission, and public comment was invited on those.
The stakeholders and the work groups, do they then go to public hearing, or what process do you have to bring in the general public beyond the work group?
Chair Messerly, we did have mostly we used our website to do that, and I think that we had some other announcements that went out by email. We did it on a fairly low budget.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Morgan?
Can you talk to us about the involvement of the local jurisdictions?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, we did involve the local jurisdictions, I think, mostly through the public hearing process. But as I say, I wasn't involved specifically in that process, so the details I can bring back.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, we will get back to you on details. I do know that we involved the LOAC. Local Official Advisories Committee. We also involved League of Cities and Association of Counties. And we will get you the detailed list of who was involved.
So you had that your input came on the association level?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan. Also, we have an advisory committee set up in statute, which is the Local Officials Advisory Committee, which to the commission, that is made up of local officials, and they were involved.
But how could you detail a bit more about how they were involved?
Chair Messerly, we may need to get back to you with someone who was involved in that process to give you some more details.
If I might just make a comment, Mr. Chair, I am real concerned about how widely input was given into this process. I mean, if you didn't actually have any public hearings and you received input from the local jurisdictions through an advisory council, I think what we're looking for here is some kind of information about how much these people were actually involved in the formation of this and how much kind of took place within the head office sphere.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, one other piece of information, and then I probably will have reached the end of what I know. We did include this as a subject discussion on a number of LCDC commission meetings, which of course are public meetings that are broadly noticed. We have a broad email distribution, and there was a number of occasions on which the strategic plan and process did receive some public participation in the commission meetings. I must admit we were trying to do this a bit on the cheap and use as much virtual input as we could.
Well, I appreciate that you were trying to be frugal about mm-hmm. this, but, you know, I think based on our previous track records on actions within the agency and certainly what happened over the interim on the Senate Bill 12 implementation through Dogami and things like that, that I'm just, I think, looking for more information about what the actual public and stakeholder and local jurisdiction involvement was.
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, we will get back with some more detail on that, and I'll bring in someone who was involved who can perhaps help you out on that one. And I do apologize for the lack of specifics here.
I want to get it clear in my mind. The input you had from the general public was through email? Is that what I heard?
Chair Mesley, I believe primarily email as well as there were some stakeholder groups that involved members of the public mm-hmm. And some LCDC meetings.
Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, if a county was going through the same kind of process, would that meet the standard for what you require from at the county level, at the local level?
Chair Mesley, I don't believe we'd require anything of counties on their strategic planning. It's when they develop comprehensive plans that have ordinances and specific details that we get involved. I don't believe we get involved in their strategic planning activities.
So would that mean then that the department is not bound by the strategic plan? If I assume that the commission is not going to adopt it then? Are we getting
rid of it? I don't believe that's what I said. The commission has adopted it. And
so it is a legal document at that point?
As a strategic plan, yes.
May I have a follow-up?
Representative Morgan?
So now I'm getting real confused, Ken, so bear with me here. So the commission has developed this strategic plan, but you're telling me, I thought I heard you say, that the impact on the local jurisdictions, that there won't be one, that they'll still be operating within their comprehensive plans?
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, the strategic plan is what governs the activity of the department and the commission in both the short term of several years and the long term of next decade or so, and it is a policy document. When we talk about land use plans, local comprehensive plans, I would hope that they are built in a structure that comports with a county or city strategic plan adopted by their governing bodies.
So what I hear you saying then is that this is a strategic plan that is only applicable to the management end of the agency and not the local jurisdictions. I mean, I'm seeing something here that says, and I'm looking at this little back-to-back page thing that you have about the mission and the vision and all that kind of thing. The strategic intent is assuring that a shared vision of a livable Oregon. So what I'm curious about here is if the agency in Salem adopts some kind of orientation to what a livable Oregon is, then if that's part of your new vision, how does that translate for the cities and the counties that have to work underneath of this?
Chair Mesley, Senator Morgan, I think now I'm confused. The strategic plan directs the commission and the department, and part of it is to work with our local partners in developing that shared vision and implementing that shared vision. So the strategic plan is telling us to work with the local partners.
Okay. So, but then again, you know, I'm not knowing what the local jurisdiction buy-in is to this new vision, it's real difficult then to know what kind of discussions went on and what kind of buy-in there is from the cities and the counties to this being laid on top of it.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, the vision that the state holds is embodied in the 19 statewide planning goals. So the commission would not be changing that or any one of those goals without extensive public input. We're required to have, I think, 7 hearings around the state whenever our commission changes a goal. But that really is how we are, what our vision is, that statement of the 19 planning goals. So what we're saying in those statements in terms of working with our partners, the local governments, is to work with them with the statewide planning goals as our vision and policy to work with them on what their vision is and to bring those together.
What do you think?
Well, I'm still...
You have that look yet.
So what I'm seeing here is, okay, you have your statewide planning goals, and I agree with Senator Dukes that they keep getting longer. It's kind of a surprise to all of us. That you've got your local jurisdictions that are trying to implement their piece of land use planning, their adopted plans. And so now what I hear you saying is that you've got a new vision for the operation of the administrative part of the agency in order to implement the statewide planning goals? Is that what...
Chair Mazzoli, Representative Morgan. I think I look at a strategic plan perhaps like a business does. It doesn't change maybe what your ultimate product is, but it directs how you do business. And it's the kind of thing that you would use as a tool to develop performance measures, expectations of employees, expectations of units of your company. And that's, I think, how we see the notion of the strategic plan, that it doesn't change the 19 goals. I believe the last of those 19 goals were added in the early 80s, and those were the coastal goals. But it tries to focus the activities of the agency and the people in the agency on the question of how we're doing business. And we see it as a tool for the how question. The what question, the framework there are the 19 goals and then the multitude of local comprehensive plans that implement those goals and the ordinances then that local jurisdictions develop to implement the plans. So if that helps make some distinctions between the strategy here. And by the way you're looking at me, I guess it doesn't.
Representative, can we try Senator Dukes for a while? Senator Dukes?
Well, I'm happy because I think for once I got one. I'm usually cross-eyed at this stuff. So I like what I'm seeing in front of me. I think it's a new way you're talking about doing business, and I like the way you're talking about working with your partners. And I'm really surprised. There's one of you says aligning public revenue and investment with statewide planning objectives. And that actually surprised me. So I think that part's headed on the right page. My question relates to the public involvement that the chair was talking about.
When we started land use planning and got serious about the goals and comprehensive plans, we had goal one, which I know is still there. I don't know that we use it much, but it's still there. And we had organizations in every city and county in this state for public involvement. And I know that some of them still exist. For example, in Washington County, there's citizens participation organizations. So what's left of Goal One and those groups, were they involved in any of this? And you can find that out and bring it back to us when you bring us back the rest of the stuff, because
I
understand.
I may know the answer to that. Do you?
No. None of you were directly involved, I understand, but I'm just real curious. To me, that's public involvement.
Yeah.
And it's an easy-to-access thing of public involvement. You've got all their mailing lists, and so.
Chair Mesley, Senator Dukes, I'm going to use another acronym on you, the CIAC, which is another advisory committee to the commission, the Citizens Involvement Advisory Committee, were, I think, active members in the discussion.
Okay. Representative Morgan?
I'm fine.
Any other questions, comments? Go ahead.
Back to the long-term goals, these are part of the strategic plan. And what we're saying here in the strategic plan is a statement of focus. And so these are the areas that we would be emphasizing on a 6 to 10 year horizon. And the first one, Secure Oregon's Legacy, is to protect farm, forest, coastal, and other natural resources. That's the emphasis there. Promote quality development is to increase the range of projects that enhance livability and sustainability in our communities. And when we get to the initiatives, I can explain a little bit more about what exactly these mean. Improve collaboration. We want to establish a network of public and private sector partners to identify and promote shared interests. And then I like to take the last two together because they really do are part of the same idea. Build workforce excellence and improve service. We're improving the quality and productivity of our employees in order to deliver the highest level of customer service possible.
Just two general comments. One, I wish improved service wasn't at the bottom of the list. But number three, improve collaboration. I even hate to see that as a separate goal, because I wish it was improve collaboration to secure Oregon's legacy, whatever the heck that means. Improve collaboration to promote quality development, improve collaboration to build workforce excellence. That is, rather than being a separate goal, I think it ought to be littered throughout the entire, all of the stuff that you do. And when we target it individually, we can say we've had, you know, 953 meetings this biennium, and so therefore, with our partners, so therefore we improved collaboration, and you might not have gotten anything out of it. Just my two cents worth.
Any other questions, comments? I want a little bit of clarification in Oregon's legacy, and I guess my question is that when you consider that in the strategic plan, how does that play in with the loss of productive land we're seeing in the state of Oregon? And I'm talking about set-asides, I'm talking about mitigation sites, wetlands. We're seeing our production capacity throughout the state, for that matter, reducing substantially. Was that discussed as you developed your strategic plan and considered the Oregon legacy?
Senator Messerly, there's one of the things that we spend a lot of time working with local governments on is buildable lands, identifying buildable lands. And at times there are places where it's not a good idea to build, like where there's a landslide danger or flood danger, or where there's a key natural resource that should be protected. And so that those types of lands get subtracted out of the count of what is considered buildable inside an urban growth boundary.
Well, are we going to be able to pursue this in more depth in your presentation?
We will.
Because I'm talking about Class 1 farmland.
Okay.
And, you know, very high class forest land, which is taken out of production.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also impacts the livability in the communities.
Senator Messerly, I think I misunderstood your question. It was coming at it from a different direction. And that Class 1 farmland and the high productivity forest land are really key aspects of the whole program, and we will come back to that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
it might be worthwhile to ask what specifics you took into consideration when you were developing or determining what Oregon's legacy would be. I'm assuming Oregon's legacy is what we're leaving to future generations, and so was it more important to, in the whole weighting scheme, to leave more high-quality farm and forest land, or more critters? Did they have equal weighting? Did we decide somewhere along the line that we had more of one thing, maybe not as much wetland as we should have? I mean, at some point they had to make a decision in what it was somebody wanted us to leave to the future. And I, going along with your concerns, I don't know how somebody or somebody's decided whether we had enough farmland but we didn't have enough wetland, or whether we had enough of everything right now and we just want to keep it all that, those proportions. I'd just be sort of curious as to what it turns out this legacy is we're leaving.
And I guess to maybe a bit farther, is this a decision that the team made at this level?
Don't you go to the proponent? To secure it. It says secure Oregon's legacy.
So this work group or this team that put together the strategic plan, did they make those kind of decisions?
Senator Messerly, Senator Dukes, that's a complicated question, and the decisions about what and how much of each are made constantly through the local planning process. We have input from federal agencies. We have input from state agencies about what are significant resources. We have our goals, none of which is primary. And so it becomes a balancing act. And all of that is done at the local level through the comprehensive plans.
Okay.
I heard a gasp from Representative Johnson.
Not a gasp, Mr. Chair. Just
that is pretty close.
I guess I just, in listening to the discussion and in reading what's in the book, it strikes me that this maybe is a little overthought. The Secure Oregon's legacy could mean all sorts of different things to whoever the reader is. Some people's legacy is cutting down trees to build a state. Some people's legacy is don't touch a tree. And I guess I'm trying to figure out, when you use such sweeping words like Secure Oregon's legacy, improve collaboration, I get a little lost. If this plan is already adopted, it's academic that we're discussing it. But a plan that explains to the lay reader what you do and what the goal of the agency is might be a little more useful than having one so subjective that it is available for the reader's interpretation. I don't know from this what you do.
And would you like to respond?
Senator Messerly, Representative Johnson. I think the details, if you follow the notion of goals eventually lead to measures, the measures are found in the links to Oregon's benchmarks and particular performance measurements, which specifically is tab 4, page 23 and following.
But
and that's where maybe some specificity is provided to what's meant by.
Mr. Chair, follow.
Sure.
I think one of the abiding characteristics of this session, both coming from the governor's office and the legislature, is the concept of simplifying processes that maybe have gotten kind of complex. And if I have to have appendices and links to benchmarks, and if the idea is to make it simple for somebody who wants to bring a business here to know what to expect when they look over the counter, whether it's at the local level or whether they look over the counter as they come up through the system, I'm just not sure how this gives people certainty. If I want to do something with my land and I can't, I shouldn't have to thumb through a book that's as thick as a Portland phone directory to find out the links to benchmarks and it would just be easier for me to know what do you do, how can you help me, what are the expectations that I should have of you and you of me. And I get a little lost in the words. I just don't know what they mean.
I'm lost. I thought I heard you say tab 4, page 23.
Yeah, and I slipped an extra copy in there so that I knew where they were. They're actually behind Appendix C on the pink sheet. My apologies for that confusion.
I'm looking. Here's the performance measures for Secure Oregon's Legacy. Percent of land outside the urban growth boundary zoned EFU in 1987, retaining that zoning. And then the second one is percentage of land outside urban growth boundary zoned in 1987 for forest or mixed farm forest use that remains zoned. So basically is the and then the rest of them appear to deal with process and other levels of protection that remain in place. So, if the first one relates to maintaining zoning outside of urban growth boundaries, that's not a change in the policy of the agency at all, then.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, you're correct that we don't have plans in changing that policy. There's a very specific decision through this strategic planning process based on the data that we have in our performance measures that it's better not to change what we're doing, that we are actually doing pretty darn well with the preserving respect to the farm and forest lands. And in that Appendix C on the it's page 4 of the document there, it shows the targets. It shows our current data and then our targets. And you can see that we're up over 99% for those targets of preserving what's in existing zoning to keep it that way.
Okay, so these are the same measurements that you've always had. You haven't changed your measurements. You've just grouped them under these headings, basically. And then I'm looking on your first slide, and it says emphasis on economic development. So how do you get from there to here?
Okay. Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, I think if I continue this, I can answer some of the questions because that's how I'm going to explain exactly.
That except any other questions that someone before we move on?
I think I finally got it. Let me check, Mr. Chair. If I look at these performance measures, they say a lot. If I look at those, do I understand what Oregon's legacy is? Because I was struggling to try to figure out just what it was we were trying to secure. And do the performance measures tell me that? Because they tell me the areas that you're going to emphasize.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is what we're protecting for the future. Okay.
Go ahead.
As I mentioned before, we have a set of strategic initiatives, and we actually have 9 of them. We've taken the top 4 And we call those also our budget goals, because the budget goals are what we are looking at for guiding the work that we do in terms of priorities for the 2003-2005 biennium. So these are what we consider our highest priority areas of work in the next biennium. And also, if you look in your book under tab 4 on pages 18 to 19, you'll see how these are worded. And they're worded as work with, collaborate with. We do work in partnerships with others to achieve our mission and to achieve these goals. So the top one here is called optimized development. And in that, we are assisting local governments and the development community to identify and prepare industrial lands that are project ready with suitable infrastructure, access, zoning, and location. And then also, we're working with local governments to revitalize downtown. Very importantly, we do work with the local governments to accomplish these things. It is a partnership. And one of the things we do in terms of services is to provide guidebooks along with the consultations that we provide and training and so forth. And one of these, and it's actually a copy of this, is in the appendix of your budget presentation book. It's provide some guidance to local governments on identifying and zoning and protecting commercial and industrial lands. And this is the result of House Bill 3557 from last session. Another one is one that works, that advises local governments and citizens on working to revitalize downtowns, and it specifically addresses some of the issues about whether you, when you have a state highway running through your downtown, and the issue, how to resolve those issues.
How do you measure these goals?
These are actually what we call our initiatives. So they're in that chart that I showed you before. We have the strategic plan that has our goals, and we have the performance measures that link directly to those goals. In trying to narrow down what we can focus on within our budget for the next biennium, we need to emphasize certain things. And so these four things are what we emphasize. In measuring those, it would circle back to the goals, primarily promote quality development for the optimized development one. So those performance measures that are linked to that particular goal would help measure.
What are those performance measures?
The performance measures on, and they're on page, under tab 4. On page 20, the second heading down, it says promote quality development. And that has a series of measures that address development, the providing for buildable lands inside urban growth boundaries, and this includes small communities. Providing the facilities that are needed to serve the development that goes there, providing for needed housing, affordable housing for the folks that live there, et cetera. So those are the ones that are keyed most directly to this specific budget goal.
Just to clarify,
excuse me, follow up.
If you were going to measure how you have optimized development, then you're going to use 7 through 11 on the performance measures. Is that what you're saying?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, yes, that is what I'm saying.
So you're going to measure optimizing development by how many areas have adopted transit-supportive land use regulations?
Well, that Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, that is one of the indicators, and this is for only large jurisdictions. We have we're looking at for 25,000 or more in population, that they actually provide regulations that are friendly to transit users, that help people get from here to there for transit users. They can access from a bus line to a store and so forth.
Okay, and then the next one, you're going to optimize development by making sure that urban areas know how much it's going to cost to put sewer, water, and transportation facilities in place?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, this is actually a very important measure. The cost of providing public facilities is a huge issue for a community in planning for their development. First, before they can raise the money, get the money to pay for those facilities, they need to know what the costs are, and in addition to that, to identify the sources where they can.
So how is this, but this is really no different from what's going on right now. These are not new measurements, right?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, these are new measurements. It is similar to what we're doing now. What we're saying is this is where we're going to be putting our emphasis in the next biennium. So in that respect, it is a priority choice, and there's a difference there because we've spread ourselves out more in different areas in the past.
It just seems to me, how about an editorial comment here, that it's process. I mean, it's not outcomes, it's process.
Well, first blush sense that I'm picking up from this is that this is not going to help us recover from this economic downturn. This is long-range type goals and measurements, and I don't see language in here that is specific as to how the department is going to help us work these processes through faster and get our economy rolling. And that's just an editorial comment as well, but and maybe we just need to work on this to understand how this is going to fit together, and maybe when we get to the streamlining part, we'll understand it better. But it seems to me that we're adding to process, not figuring out how to make this process run smoother.
Chair Messerly, we do want to talk about some streamlining issues, but I guess I do want to state that most people probably agree that it is critical to have an adequate supply, not only of farm and forest. We've been in that business for decades. But it's critical to have an adequate supply of commercial and industrial lands, buildable lands, and lands that can suit the needs of both residential, commercial, and industrial lands. Now, the department cannot assure that a local government provides that. But one of the things that we're sort of out on the limb on our performance measures, particularly 9, 10, 11 under that subsection 2, is helping jurisdictions get there, helping them assess the lands they have, helping them do the buildable inventories, helping them do the zoning that's necessary, and in some cases, helping expand the UGB in order to bring in, for example, one of those industrial sites, which is something that LCDC has just done in terms of, and I'm going over in the streamlining for a minute, maybe where that the metropolitan area has got a rather significant UGB expansion project that is ongoing. It's also quite controversial. In order to streamline and to address some of the sort of critical industrial site needs, we actually segmented out of their project, the UGB expansion project, the five industrial sites that were just outside the UGB that they needed to expand the boundary for in order to allow for industrial development. We took those sites out of their big, gigantic submission and said, let's deal with those. And that's what the commission did at its last meeting, so that those five sites that everyone pretty much had pretty much agreement on is that they were good sites for industrial development, for everything from sort of the high-tech industry to your more traditional development, and went ahead and approved the UGB expansion for those sites rather than sort of getting bogged down in what is going to be a fairly contentious big question on the UGB expansion. And I guess that's kind of linking the notion of helping communities get to the point where they've got more sites and helping them to get there in a more streamlined fashion than perhaps we've done in the past.
Man, let me give you a couple of examples that come to my mind as we're talking about this. Number one is the Brookings community, when they wanted to expand their urban growth boundary into some land adjacent that was not good for anything else. They went through years of conflict with the department. And that's been a while back. But more recently in Lane County, when the county adopted a policy or goal of industrial sites on abandoned or not fully utilized, at least, mill sites, and they really restricted what you could do with those sites that had, many of them had rail, water, and highway adjacent to them. And I know that the department did not get involved in that. And so we're trying to work it through the legislative process now to make those kind of lands available. I'm trying to figure out how this interaction works, where it's really helping people move forward, and maybe as opposed to putting another burden on them trying to resolve some of these issues.
Chair Messerly, I'm not terribly familiar with the specifics of the Lane County situation. I will tell you, also at the last LCDC meeting, we passed an emergency temporary rule that would allow industrial siting on some of those mill sites that had facilities. And perhaps that even the legislature will take that idea. I know we're working with a group of people on the mill site issue, and you may take it into statute. But we did pass an emergency rule just about a month ago to address some of those issues.
The issue I'm talking about is where they put a limit on the square footage that you could put a building on some of those industrial sites. It was totally restrictive on utilizing those lands efficiently at all. Representative Morgan.
Well, I'm looking at optimized development, and I'm looking at your process goals for getting there. But I'm wondering how you go back to Secure Oregon's legacy, which is appears to me to limit the land that's outside of urban growth boundaries. And I mean, what you're measuring is conversion or lack of conversion in a whole bunch of different areas, and how you're going to optimize development if the top of your list is to limit growth.
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, the way that the statewide planning goals work, there isn't one thing at the top of the list, and the very foundation of the program is the urban growth boundaries to encourage development there, optimize it, if you want to use that word, inside urban growth boundaries, and not to stop development outside of urban growth boundaries, but to make sure that when development occurs, that it's not detracting from the farm and forest land base that we have for those industries. So we do have rural communities. We do have industrial sites that are outside urban growth boundaries. It's a balance between the two, because both are needed, and so it isn't a one or the other.
Well, I would just ask you again to read through your performance measures for Secure Oregon's Legacy. And if your goal is to optimize the availability of industrial lands and commercial lands and residential lands for development, it would seem to me that you're at cross purposes here, and you're not being clear at where your priorities are. You know, you're just kind of throwing all this stuff out there.
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, I think you've hit the crux of what the difficult problem for DLCD is, because we do have this incredible set of resources of farm and forest lands, industrial lands, commercial lands, residential needs, and the way the state has chosen to balance those needs is through a process that says based on the quality of the land for certain uses, in an EFU zone, there's a policy choice that the first priority on that land is agriculture. Now, there are situations that other kinds of activities can occur on that land. And then we've also made a policy judgment that within UGBs, there is a priority on development. And I think what you've done is you've identified the incredibly difficult problem of balancing all these, in fact, conflicting uses on a land base that we as a state face. And yes, and they do on their face perhaps appear in conflict with each other. I don't think they are, because I think if you look at the Secure Oregon's legacy performance measures, we're talking about uses on exclusive farmland, we're talking about farm and forest lands, and when we're talking about optimizing development, we're looking at the best places to put that kind of development that allows a really complex society to balance competing needs.
I was curious, in your under promote quality development, the 7 through 11 performance measures here, as you work with the Economic Development Department to try to get cities and communities to able to move forward and have more development, are these the things that they most often point out are missing?
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, the one thing that is consistently brought up is the need for project-ready industrial land, and that is where we're working the closest with them, is to identify that. So that is a short-term supply. This book that I held up before, one of the things that it concluded or found was that there isn't really a problem so much with the long-term supply of industrial land, but it's more the short-term supply. So we are really working and focusing on identifying those particular locations throughout the state which are closest to being ready for development, for industrial development. At the same time, making sure that the long-term supply will be there for the future.
This just sounds like the sort of thing that my cities and counties are continually fussing about. I mean, it's having sewer and water, being able to identify a particular or zone a particular piece of land as industrial or as commercial. And just a number of the things that you're talking about here. And it seems to me that they don't always look ahead. They tend to look short-term. We want to develop this. And if indeed their plan makes sense, it should be looking a little broader, maybe.
Any other comments? Go ahead.
I think I left off just before provide buildable lands, but I think it's pretty similar to or it involves a lot of the things that we were just talking about. Streamlined government, there's not a lot of specific information in your overview section in the budget presentation, but in the detailed section, if you look under tab A on page 10 in that section, it provides a list of the kinds of things that we are working on or will be working on next biennium to help cut red tape, basically, make it easier for development to happen, especially the high-priority kind of development in terms of producing jobs. And just going through that list real quickly, one of those is state agency integration. So it is working, for instance, with Department of Economic Development to help where they can help identify what kinds of industries are appropriate for a certain area. We can help identify the specific properties and the facilities that are needed to serve a property. Periodic review is a process that we've had concerns with for a couple of years now. It is widely known as taking, quote, too long, and it's a process that we work with local governments. We work with them to help them update their plans. And we do have, right at this point during the legislative session, a work group looking into how to streamline that process. Appeals process, a lot of concern. Most of the appeals occur on local government decisions, so we'll be examining those and where the hang-ups are and trying to work with local governments to address those. Plan amendment process is another process of our department process for reviewing local plans. And that's probably fairly streamlined, but I think at this point we're going to be looking at what are the highest priorities for us to pay attention to and helping local governments with those high priorities in terms of providing that project-ready industrial land. Grants and technical assistance are really, I think, the foundation of the service that we give local governments. So the better that we can provide those, the faster, the more targeted for their needs, that's what we're going to be looking at. And UGB amendments, our UGB amendment process is sometimes confusing for folks, and so we're looking at trying to consolidate the requirements for amending a UGB and making them clear and much easier for local governments to follow.
If I might go back to appeals, and then you and I have talked about this. We're interested in the state-initiated appeals, which I assume means comes from your department. What were those appeals? What was the cost of those appeals? And how were they resolved?
Yep, Senator Masterly, we'll be bringing you that information probably tomorrow.
Okay. Go ahead.
And the last one on our high priority list for this biennium or coming biennium is make community transportation work better. And so what we will be doing is collaborating with local governments and with ODOT to make those systems work better, to improve the plans and identify projects that need to be built. The other five strategic initiatives, and these have more of a 2 to 4 year time horizon, our farm forest program. So we're maintaining our current efforts, as I mentioned before, to preserve farm and forest land for those industries. Natural hazards planning, assisting local governments in identifying and planning for natural hazards. Natural resources, working with the state and federal agencies and local governments to protect key resources. Outreach, increase awareness and civic engagement in land use and planning statewide. And our services, to improve our services to citizens, local governments, and agencies by enhancing our workforce and workplace productivity.
you have a more detail of what you're talking about there?
On the services, I could bring that for you.
Before we end the meeting, we've got about two or three more minutes if you'd like to go.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Okay, I'm lost. Where do I find the natural resources portion?
It is. On page 19 in the overview section, it's actually called environmental protection on that particular version. And when we looked at it for this presentation, we thought, well, why did we call it that? Because what we're really talking about is natural resource.
Where is it in here?
It's in the overview section.
I think the question is
tab four.
I guess I didn't.
Section.
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, I'm afraid I didn't understand your question.
Well, I'd found transportation, and I'd found agency collaboration and natural hazards and streamlining and some of that, but I couldn't find natural resources in here, and since it's up there, I thought it would be in here somewhere.
Are you looking in the detail section?
I'm behind tab A.
Okay.
But I could go anywhere you want me to go. Just point me.
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, that section does list a series of tools or the ways that we work with local governments to provide our services. And so it's a little bit different. It's how we provide our services rather than the objective of those services, which in this case would be protecting natural resources.
I wanted to understand your strategic initiative for natural resources. How would I do that?
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, I'm trying to think of the right place to direct you in the book, or if it's just a question that we need to address separately to provide that information. We look at our statewide planning goals, and for natural resources, one of those goals would be natural resources, goal 5. Another one is air, water, and land resources, goal 6. So those state the policy for our program in terms of how we work with local governments to address natural resource protection is through all these different kinds of tools that we use, whether it's grants to local governments or whatever, technical assistance, periodic review, to help the local governments identify those resources and protect those.
Never mind.
Oh.
Senator Duke, thank you. Representative Krager, you've got the closing remarks today.
Well, it appears, Mr. Chair, that the committee isn't understanding all of the presentation. Senator Dukes a few minutes ago said she was lost. If you take another step further, the agencies are trying to determine their goals, the public is trying to meet the rules, and you'll have a test tomorrow on terminology.
Okay. With that, I'm going to pick up again tomorrow where we left off today. I'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee meeting.